You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.
All right, well, welcome. The title of this breakout, and for the ladies, not the men, but for the ladies, I'm doing another breakout on the fifth breakout time. There was a lady from Florida that couldn't come because of the hurricane, and they called me and asked me to fill in for her. So if anybody's interested, but it's not in this room. It's in another room on the second floor. The title today is What Do Biblical Counselors Really Need to Know About Psychotropic Drugs? Well, they don't need to know a lot, but you do need to know a little bit. 40 plus years ago, the meds were not a problem because there weren't any. There were just a very few meds there. Now they are abundant and reproducing rapidly. And another problem that we have now is all varieties of doctors are prescribing them. It's not just the psychiatrist, but the thought of the psychiatrist today is polypharmacy. If you have a symptom, they give you one drug and then they won't take that drug away. They'll give you another one and another one, another one. I've had I don't know how many ladies come to me, and they were on four or five psychotropic drugs. Well, by the time you get to that many medications, you're just like narcotized in your brain, so it's hard to think. They are often, at that point, once you get to at least two or three, medicating side effects of the medicine. So I'll give you a couple of examples of my counselees. I had a young wife and mother a while back. She was placed on five different psychotropic drugs. And if you're going to a psychiatrist, you have to go once a month, because they won't give you more than a month's worth of the prescription. So she came to me because she was complaining that she could not think straight or function. She was married, she had children, little children, and she was having a hard time functioning. She went back to her psychiatrist and said, "I just think I'm on too much medicine. I'm having a hard time functioning." And he said, "I know what your problem is. You have adult attention deficit disorder." And you could have bowled me over with a feather when she said that. I tried to keep a straight face. But anybody on the medicine she was on would have adult attention deficit disorder. So he put her on Concerta. Concerta is an upper. It's a stimulant drug related to methamphetamines. And it perked her up. And she told me, she said, "I will go off of all my medicine except the Concerta. I love Concerta." And I'm like, I could use some Concerta right now. And then I recently had a young woman come to me, and she was on five different psychotropic medicines. And she was seeing the nurse practitioner who worked for her psychiatrist. She was a nervous wreck. And she had been diagnosed as bipolar. She couldn't sleep. One of the medicines that this nurse practitioner had put her on was a seizure medicine, which that can happen. They can use that for bipolar. but it was an off-label drug. I'd never even heard of it. I had to look it up. We looked it up. We Googled it. I was sitting there with her. She was suicidal. She was shaking. She was just a nervous wreck. And a major warning with this drug was the main side effect was suicide. And it said most people cannot tolerate this drug because of that. And I just told her, I said, you need to tell your psychiatrist you're not going to take that anymore. So she quit taking that, and then she was able then to not be suicidal and so panicked. So you do need to know a little bit. You need to know enough to counsel someone who's apparently over-medicated and can't think straight. Most of my counselees that are on psychotropic drugs, and I don't make a deal out of it, we do have it on the forms. They fill out the PDI form, what medicine you're taking. They present with, I want to get off this medicine. So I tell them, let me counsel you. Let's just work together for a while till you think you're emotionally ready to start getting off the medicine. And I think you are. And then I can prepare you for what to tell your psychiatrist or your doctor that put you on the medicine. Because there's ways you're going to have withdrawal effects, and that's tough. Some of them are tough to get through. So I want to prepare you for that and help you with that when the time comes. But I don't like give them a hard time about why are you on this medicine and you don't need to be on this medicine. I don't know. They may need to be on that medicine. So the goals of this workshop, I want to give you some definitions and some categories of psychotropic medicines. And I want to tell you how, as a counselor, you should think about these medicines and how to respond to the counselee's questions about them. And I want to give a tiny little brief history of psychiatric medications, some basic side effects that you need to know about, and then what to tell your counselee when you and they think they're ready to begin slowly tapering off their medicines. So the first definition is the DSM. The DSM is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders. This is the psychiatric Bible, and it's the fifth. They update it frequently, but this is the fifth edition now that they're on. The DSM gives a label to the thoughts and behavior of the patient. They don't use the word disease, but they use the word disordered. Disordered thinking, disordered behavior. They can't prove it's a disease. That's why they use the word disorder. There's numbers. If you look at the DSM, by each diagnosis, there's a code number, and that's what the doctor's offices use to code for the insurance to get reimbursed. And it lists thoughts and behaviors. There's no blood test or no scan that they can do to show that you have some sort of mental disease. Marshall and Mary Asher have written a book. I can't think of the name of it right now. But each diagnosis, they put a chart of what the DSM says and then biblically how to rethink that. So Christian's Guide to Psychological Terms. Thank you. That, if you've never seen that, that's very helpful. You need one. The word psychotropic refers to psychiatric medicines used to treat, among other things, depression, anxiety, psychosis, which somebody has a break with reality, mania, schizophrenia, and attention deficit disorder. And then point number C, diagnosis or term, is discontinuation syndrome. Now, these medicines, almost all of them have, when the person starts withdrawing from the medicine, they're going to have experience side effects. And they call it discontinuation syndrome. I call it withdrawing from something you're addicted to. It's very hard. But it sounds better, discontinuation syndrome, than addiction. But that's what it is. Some counselees can easily taper off the medicines and do well. They might be uncomfortable for a while or have some symptoms for a while, but some people just have a nightmare getting off. And you don't know when you go on a medicine like this if you're going to be one of the ones that have a nightmare getting off. So, and then there's the black box warning. Now, if there's a particularly dangerous side effect, the medicines have what they call a black box warning. The antidepressants have a black box warning for teenagers and young adults. Greatly increase risk of suicide when you start on one of the antidepressants. So I was kind of consulting with a family whose teenage boy was suicidal, and he got put in a psychiatric facility. The doctor called the parents and said, "We want to put him on an antidepressant." All right, he was already suicidal, and this black box warning on this drug. I had warned the parents about the black box warning, and they told the doctor, "No, you cannot put him on that medicine." Well, there was a problem with how the doctor wrote the order, and the nurse went ahead and started it. Well, when the kid told his parents that what he was taking, they called the hospital and complained, and the next thing they knew, they heard from the hospital's lawyer, because what they had done was illegal. And anyway, they took him off the medicine, so he just had a little bit of it. He was fine. But if the parents had not known about this, they would have said, "Oh yeah, you trust your doctor." So the black box warning, you can look it up. You can Google it. Google is your friend. And you can learn about them. But this teenagers and young adults are impulsive anyway. And if they're that emotionally disturbed, and see, these antidepressants are chemically related to methamphetamines, and more loosely chemically related to cocaine. So it's a stimulant. It's an upper, if you will. So if they're already nervous and anxious and distraught, and you give them something that makes them more that way, they could easily commit suicide. And then point E, I want to talk about categories of psychotropic medicines. There's not that many categories. There are the tranquilizers. They're called benzodiazepines, and they calm the counselee's anxiety. They're very highly addictive, That's why most doctors won't give you a tranquilizer, but for just a few days. Examples are Xanax, Klonopin, Ativan, and Valium. Years ago, when they started advertising drugs on TV, they used to wouldn't allow that, but they do now. The drug companies would come out with a new tranquilizer and just tout it as safe and effective and non-addictive. But time has told otherwise. So now when there's a new drug in one of the benzodiazepine categories, they go ahead and say it's addictive. Another category of drugs are the antidepressants. These are stimulant medicines. They perk up the counselee's mood. Most people are taking the Prozac-type medications. Prozac was the first one, and now there's probably a dozen of them. Medicines like Celexa, Lexapro, Paxil, Zoloft. These medicines are in the category of SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Now, Prozac came on the market in 1988, and it targets the neurochemicals in the brain, the dopamine, the serotonin, the norepinephrine. Prozac targets serotonin, and the way the Lord made the brain is unbelievable. It's just fascinating. But you've got trillions of microscopic brain cells, and the little brain cell, it has a semi-permeable skin on it. Skin is not the medical term, but that's just what I'm saying. So you have to have these neurochemicals in the fluid space, the cerebral spinal fluid in the brain, in order for signals to go from one part of the brain to the other. The chemicals, if there's not enough serotonin or dopamine or norepinephrine, the little cells, somehow God imprinted it in there that they just make more, and then it shifts out into the fluid space. If there's too much in the fluid space, it shifts back in. Well, these antidepressants are reuptake inhibitors, so it changes the permeability of the cell wall. So you end up with a massive amount of serotonin or dopamine or whatever the medicine is targeting there. But the thought was that the depression is being caused by an imbalance, a chemical imbalance, and that it's just not true. It's been proven that that's not true. That was always a theory. And next year, they're going to have me talk about chemical imbalance. So I have an article on that if you want to have it ahead of time. There's no secret that the psychiatrists, my counselees don't come to me hardly anymore saying, I have a chemical imbalance. I have a disease. I have to have this medicine. The psychiatrists are not telling them that because it's not true, and they know it's not true. So the drug companies keep making these drugs, new ones. They're trying to decrease the bad side effects, and they keep trying, but they still have the same kinds of side effects. And then there's the category of sleeping pills. Think of this category as a strong tranquilizer, like Ambien or Lunesta. One of the antidepressants can help you to sleep. Trazodone is one of those antidepressants. And when your counselee, if they're on a sleeping pill, they're so addictive that when they stop, they often are going to have trouble sleeping again for a while. And it's a bad sign when your counselee cannot sleep. If anybody that goes enough days without sleeping is going to have a psychotic break. So you have to just be aware of that. In the Navy, and the Navy SEALs, in the training, they keep them awake for 7 days with no sleep, and they all have a psychotic episode. But they warn them about it and tell them, we want you to see what this feels like and what you're thinking, so that in battle you may not be able to sleep. And if that happens, they want you to know you can still function. I don't think I could function. But anyway, the antipsychotics are given for psychotic break. Medicines like Abilify, Zyprexa, Haldol, Seroquel, some of them are very strong. The Abilify you see advertised a lot. If your antidepressant that helped you out is not working so good now, add Abilify to it, and that will help you. This category of medicines is very difficult to tolerate because of the side effects. They're out of touch with reality. They're hearing voices. They're seeing things that aren't there. The drug companies, as I said, advertise to add a milder antipsychotic with the antidepressant. Usually the antidepressant stimulant effect, to kind of perk you up, lasts about 6 weeks. And then it just kind of, you're sort of hooked on it, and that effect doesn't, it's not as good as it was. And when the antidepressant, usually the doctors, when they put you on one, they put you on a very low dose because some people really react badly to it, and it will increase it gradually. So just to be safe, try to be safe. Mood stabilizers are given for counselees diagnosed as bipolar to keep them from going into a manic phase, so they're put on a stimulant drug for the depression and then a suppressant drug to calm them down. Some of the suppressant drugs are seizure medicines, which makes sense that they would use that. There's a new medicine called Vraylar. You may have heard that advertised on TV. It's a combination of stimulant and mood stabilizer medication. Getting back to us as biblical counselors, how should a biblical counselor think about psychotropic medicines? Well, point number A, don't be intimidated or overreact. Doctors are trying to help their patients feel better. They're not doing anything illegal. They have a different philosophy or belief about it than we would. Dr. Bob Smith wrote, he's gone to be with the Lord now, but in the year 2000, he wrote the Christian Counselor's Medical Desk Reference. And I have a quote from him from that, which I think is encouraging. He said, at no time you are counseling the drug. You are always dealing with the person. He may be greatly affected by the medication, but you are still counseling him, not the drug. Even if the medication slows down his thinking, process, he can still think, although it may take longer to do the counseling, but it can be done. The time will come when the issue of medication will need to be addressed. So ask your counselor what medicines they're taking. And as I said, remember, Google is your friend. They may be experiencing side effects, not only of the psychotropic medicines, but other medicines as well. If they have to be on steroids every day, for some diseases you have to be on steroids, that has a major side effect of depression. If they have to be on, some people are hypothyroid, and just being hypothyroid can make you depressed. They may need to be on thyroid medicine, or that may need to be switched or changed or something done with that. So there are some medicines that are seizure medicines have a side effect of depression. So if somebody has seizures and they're on, and they have got to be on those medicines, that is something that you can help them biblically with the Lord's help to fight those depression feelings that they have. And then point C, don't be afraid to counsel someone on psychotropic medicines. They are not a gospel barrier. God's power is greater. So don't confuse what we're thinking. That's our heart. When the Bible talks about as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. It's talking about, the Bible is talking about what you're thinking, what you're longing for, what you're desiring. Don't confuse that with your physical brain. They're two different things. Another quote from Dr. Bob. Is a nervous breakdown a physical problem caused by some biologic problem in the brain? One important biblical and anatomical concept to keep in mind is that the human being is both material and non-material. Non-material is your soul. He has a physical body, which can be seen, and a spirit or soul, which is non-physical and cannot be seen. The brain is material, the mind is non-material. The mind uses the brain, but it is not the brain. The brain can be diseased and sick, but not the mind. If the brain is damaged, the mind is not sick. With brain damage, the damaged part is no longer available to the mind, and thus function is altered, but the damage can be demonstrated. This is not a mental condition, but an organic physical brain damage. I remember years ago I was taking a graduate course on the brain, and I was not a Christian then, but I was just fascinated with the teacher. It was this woman, I don't remember her name, but she just knew so much about the brain, and I'm sure they know more now than they did back then. But it occurred to me, how do you think a thought? And so I raised my hand and I asked her that question. She probably thought, well, here's another Christian trying to trap me. I was just innocent. I just wanted to know, how do you think a thought? And she said, we don't know. And then she went on. So they don't know, because they just see us from a scientific, humanistic perspective. The factor is God and being made in the image of God. And I already said, the chemical imbalance theory has been discredited. It is not true. And then point E, for further reading about antidepressants lifting mood, see the STAR D, capital D, study, which basically proves that the antidepressants do not lift the mood as the doctors had hoped. The study gave patients, some patients got a placebo, a sugar pill, and some got the antidepressant. And the ones that got the placebo did just as well as the ones who got the antidepressant. All right, now, point four, Roman numeral number four. Helping counselees come safely off their medication, antidepressants, and not be surprised with the temporary withdrawal effects. As I said, most counselees come or express the desire to come off their medicines. Some people don't like the side effects. With the antidepressants, most people lose weight to begin with. Most people are happy with that. But then after a while, they start gaining weight. And some people gain enormous amounts of weight on the antidepressants. And of course, they don't like that. The withdrawal is so miserable that if you think they're ready, emotionally stable enough to start coming off the medicine, the drug literature says to the doctor, cut the medicine in half if they're coming off an antidepressant, and then wait about 3 weeks and then take them off of that. Most people cannot tolerate that. It is way too fast. The withdrawal effects are miserable. So before I tell you more about that, though, let's talk about a brief history of psychotropic medicines. These drugs come and go. 100 years ago, the drug of the day was cocaine, and it did perk the people's attitude up. But it was highly addictive. I mean, some people can do cocaine once and be addicted. Cocaine can cause you to have a heart attack. It's that strong of a stimulant drug. And Freud experimented with cocaine himself, and that explains a lot. But in the 1960s, which is when I was in nursing school, the main treatments were Thorazine, Librium, Pentobarbital, and shock treatments. Now, they sent us, I was in a hospital, I was a hospital-based nurse program. They sent us to the psychiatric hospital in Milledgeville. Back then, they didn't have regional psychiatric hospitals in states. They had one big psychiatric hospital. And I was not a Christian, but that was the most miserable quarter I have ever spent in my whole entire life. Somebody who was psychotic or violent or out of control, some of them were actually in cages because they would try to kill somebody else or harm somebody else or harm themselves. So this pattern in the drugs has emerged. The drug is touted as safe, then time proves otherwise. And I remember helping, when somebody was violent or suicidal and they would be admitted to one of these buildings in this psychiatric facility, they would do shock treatments. Well, as a student nurse, I had to help a couple of days. I had to help a doctor do the shock treatments. Now, they sedated the patient, and so it didn't hurt the patient, but they would do the shock treatments. And, I mean, it was just, it's a scary thing to see. And then the patient, the thought was, because of the shock treatment, they're going to have a short-term memory loss, which they do, because it kills some brain cells. And because of the short-term memory loss, they won't remember why they were so depressed or so upset or so suicidal. Now, they still do shock treatments, but not near as much as they did back in the 60s. One of the problems with these psychiatric drugs is all specialties of doctors are prescribing those medicines. And often, I think, this is just my opinion, that they are misdiagnosing as depression probably what the underlying problem for the patient is, anxiety, because it's such a huge contributing factor to depression. So sometimes they're actually put on, I think, the wrong medicine. Now, it's not a sin for the doctor to prescribe these medicines. It's not illegal for them. They are sincerely trying to help. We need the doctor's help. I have sent counselees to a psychiatrist if they're really out of touch with reality, or I've sent them to psychiatric hospitals. I've called their family in and said, you have to take them, or I'm going to have to call the police to take them if they're a harm to themselves or harm to somebody else. That doesn't happen often. It doesn't happen hardly at all, but it does happen. Now, the side effects of the antidepressants. Now, remember, these medicines affect every nerve cell in the body. It's not just the brain. So usually the patient may have increased anxiety. They may even have a panic attack, which they may or may not have ever even had a panic attack, but it can make them extremely nervous. They can get paranoid when they start taking this. And the first month is the danger time for these side effects, pretty much, or if the doctor increases or puts them on an additional one. Other side effects: sleeplessness, abnormal dreams. They don't sleep as well. It's a stimulant drug. Panic attacks, akathasia. Now, akathasia, akathasia, is a dangerous, very dangerous side effect. And you don't see it very often, but if you ever see it, you'll probably recognize it. The counselee, I had a lady years ago that was started on a Prozac-type drug, and she came to me 2 weeks. She was only on the drug for 2 weeks. She could not even sit down. She was wringing her hands. She was pacing. She was just like a caged animal. And her doctor had put her on, I think, Prozac. And I said, well, I think you're having a reaction to your Prozac. You need to tell your doctor you need to stop taking it. And she did stop taking it. And then she gradually, over the time, got better and better. But she was not even suicidal to begin with, but she became suicidal with this akathasia. It can cause dry mouth, upset stomach, decreased appetite, nausea and vomiting, weight gain, decreased sex drive, sweating, and blurred vision. I know of one surgeon who put himself on Prozac because he was depressed, but he had to take himself off of Prozac because his vision got blurred. Now, don't you know that's cute? When the surgeon comes in and he's got blurred vision. I know of another man who was started on an antidepressant, and he started having heart rhythm problems. That's pretty common. He had to stop taking it. And his wife said it's just too bad he had to stop taking it. Hair loss, dry skin, runny nose, anemia, swelling, low blood sugar, low thyroid activity. I've seen this akathisia side effect probably about four times, and is obvious. It's disturbing when you see somebody who is struggling like that. It's dangerous. Let's see. And then there are the TDs, tardive dyskinesias. Now, they're starting to advertise this on TV. You may have seen it. It's various uncontrollable neurological side effects. Their mouth may, because of the Prozac type drugs, their mouth may droop, like the looks like they've had a stroke, but they haven't had a stroke. Their mouth may have bizarre movements. Even their tongue can start darting in and out of their mouth without, and they can't stop it. They can't control it. Now, most psychiatrists will take the patient off their medicine when they start having one of these side effects, but the side effect may or may not go away. It may be permanent, or it may be temporary, but it might take weeks for it to subside. So now they're saying, on the ads, they're saying, we've got a new medicine for you, to an addition to this, and I need to look more into that, but I'm not sure that would be that helpful. So what do you tell your counselee? You need to pray for wisdom. We are not doctors. We are not supposed to be prescribing medicine, but it's a judgment call. In James 1, it says, if you lack wisdom, ask of God, and he will give it to you. The first time, years ago, when I started observing Lou Priolo in counseling, I did not want to be a counselor, but my husband was pushing me to do that. And people would ask him questions or say something, counselees would, and he would always have an answer. And I'm like, I was clueless as to what I would have said. And finally, one day, Lou said to somebody, let me think about that and I'll get back with you. And I thought, I could say that. So, and then he would call Jay Adams on the phone. I mean, we were a small little group back then. But pray for wisdom. God will give it to you. If you don't know what to do, don't just make up something. Just say, let me think about that. I'll get back with you. Do tell your counselee if you think they're suicidal or maybe experiencing akathisia. So that's... if they have a suicide plan, if they're pacing, if they're a nervous wreck, they need to be helped by the medical community. The counselee is at greatest risk the first month that they're taking an antidepressant. After that, the brain just kind of settles down with that. But then after that, if they stop taking it, they're going to have the withdrawal effects. The most dangerous side effects to watch for: akathisia, uncontrollable leg movements, anxiety, panic attacks, and insomnia. So most of the time, most patients, if it's the first month on an antidepressant or less time, they can stop taking it and not have withdrawal effects. But that, they still need to consult with their doctor. You don't tell them to stop taking it. Be aware the antidepressants carry the black box warning, especially for teens and young adults. The most common withdrawal effects, and this is what I've seen over the years, are the counselee can have increased anxiety, crying spells, insomnia, irritability, dizziness, flu-like aches and pains. They feel like they have the flu, but they don't have a fever. I had one counselee that I was not counseling anymore, but she decided to go off of her antidepressant, so she quit taking it. Twice she went to the doctor because she thought she had the flu, and she did not. But if she had known that that was one of the withdrawal effects, it probably would have helped her. Nausea, vomiting, headaches. A lot of people have just terrible headaches. Tremors, sensory abnormalities, like these electric shock-like symptoms. It's like you're zapped. It could be in your leg, it could be in your arm, all over your body, what this, like somebody had shocked you. And a lot of patients don't have that withdrawal effect, but some do, and it's scary when it happens. But if they know that these things might happen, they're not going to panic as much as they would have. And those things will go away. It just takes time for that. Now, it depends on the half-life of the medicine. The half-life is how long it takes half of the medicine you have in your blood to metabolize out. It's detoxed by the liver and excreted by the kidney. Prozac has such a long half-life. You could quit taking Prozac today, and then 6 weeks from now, you'll start withdrawing. So you think you're fine until you start withdrawing from it. Some medicines, like Effexor, has such a short half-life that within hours of missing a pill, you can start withdrawing. So it depends. The newer drugs have the shorter half-life because it's not good to have this long half-life and have this medicine in your body that long. I read a book from Dr. Joseph Glenmullen, and he wrote this several years ago, but it's called The Antidepressant Solution. He is a non-Christian psychiatrist, and he's a Harvard Medical School grad. He's in Boston, and he teaches some at the medical school there. He's Harvard trained. He says, I read the book. It was fascinating. He took, I think, 5 or 6 patients. He has helped hundreds of people come off of their medicine. And one of the things he stresses is most doctors cut it in half, like the literature says, way too fast. People cannot tolerate that. And they come back in with these withdrawal symptoms, and then the doctor starts treating the withdrawal symptoms. And it's just like spinning your wheel. So it is helpful to know a little bit about the things I'm telling you. In case you need to talk to the doctor, I have been a couple of times with a counselee to a psychiatrist or a new psychiatrist, and it was just helpful for me and I think the doctor that we kind of knew what we were both talking about. Even if you never talk to your counselee about their medication, the research you do will help you have an overall picture of what is happening with your counselee. Prozac, if they're on Prozac, it comes in a liquid. So you can really, really do little tiny doses of the doctor can of taking them off of it. Give your counselee hope that for the Christian, they can supernaturally be controlled by the Holy Spirit. God is not going to give them more than they can bear, but they may feel a lot of anxiety, they may feel overwhelmed. That's 1 Corinthians 10:13. And recommend that they continue with counseling. Now, usually when somebody is trying to, with their doctor's help, get off of one of these medicines, I like to see them more often. So counseling like that, I'm probably only seeing like every other week or every third week because they're doing so much better. But when you need to go back to at least weekly there until their thoughts and emotions stabilize. They can have joy again in giving God glory. You've got to teach your counselee a biblical view of sanctification and the three aspects of sanctification. Just because they may have grown up in church, they may never have even heard the word sanctification. Where their feelings come from, their heart is what they're thinking and desiring. We have thoughts, then because of those thoughts, we have emotions or feelings, and then you put those two things together, and then they have actions, which can be very detrimental to them. When you and your counselor think they're ready to go off the medicine, tell them or suggest to them to tell their doctor. They can say something like, I've been receiving counseling. My counselor and I both think I'm ready to begin tapering off the medicine. Would you be willing to help me slowly taper off? And I've only had one doctor say, no, I won't help you. But that counselee went, and she and I had talked about it. I've been counseling her a long time. I said, do you think, you know, you're doing so much better that you're ready to slowly start tapering off? And she said, I think so. So she went to her doctor, and the first thing he said was, are you still suicidal? And she said, yes. I know he thought, well, your counselor is crazy. So anyway, you'd have to know her, but she came back and told me he wouldn't help me. And I said, well, why not? What did you tell him? She said, well, I still think about killing myself. I said, well, he'd be crazy to have started taking you off of that medicine. So I still see her, but we haven't talked about that again. If their doctor refuses and I would want to know why, because he may have a good reason. Like that doctor had a good reason. So, but they do have freedom in the Lord. Use that expression. I use that a lot. You have the freedom in the Lord to get a second opinion. It's not, it shouldn't hurt your doctor's feelings if you do that. And as biblical counselors, we help them to renew their minds and hold them accountable for their actions. And the big picture in Matthew 22, which is what I stress to all my counselees, because I want to help them to be dependent on the Lord, to start thinking in terms of how can I show love to God more in this situation I'm in, and how can I show love to others? And of course, those are the two great commandments, and I go over that in detail, Matthew 22. And as I said, when your counselee is tapering off, you probably need to see them more often to encourage them and to give them hope. And always keep in mind, we have the good news of the gospel. We are persuaded of the sufficiency of Christ and the sufficiency of the Word of God. 2 Peter 1, God has given us everything we need pertaining to life and godliness. Don't be intimidated by the medicines. Be confident in what we do know for certain, And for certain, we have the sure word of God restoring the soul. Psalm 19, verse 7. That's what we really need to know. Now, years ago, it was popular in NAINC to just tell your counselee, just go home and flush all your psychiatric medicines down the toilet. Don't do that. We don't do that anymore. That's dangerous. That would be counterproductive. But then we were told, we're not doctors. You just don't even address the medicine. I think we're beyond that. Sometimes we need to talk about that if they want to talk about it, or even if they don't bring it up, you might want to talk about it. So, does anybody have any questions? Yes.
Psychotropic drugs are needed, and can be tolerated if need be.
I'm going to repeat the question for the tape. Are there any instances where psychotropic drugs should be used? Yes, I think so, and I think if somebody has a psychotic break, they definitely need to be on a psychiatric medicine, a psychotropic drug. There are most, my experience has been, and I've been doing this since 1989 when I became a NAINC counselor. I think that the medicines, as I said earlier, back then they just weren't that big of a deal. Now they are a big deal, and it's getting more complicated. So there, I do not try to put them on a guilt trip about their medicine. Mm-hmm. They're not doing anything wrong. They're not doing anything illegal. They're being wise in taking their doctor's, opinion and what he thinks will help them. The doctor's trying to help them. So, but you just have to pray for wisdom and be gentle, especially with the faint-hearted. And it's just like when you see a counselee for the first time, even if they're not on medicine, you don't tell them everything you know. You don't have time to do that. And they just need some hope. You need to gather data and give them some hope. So Jay Adams used to say, God is in the problem. And that just, in that little sentence, I can hear him saying it, gives me hope and gives the counselor hope and the counselee hope. So yes, the medicine is out there. It is not going to go away, I don't think. But I do think that we don't need to be intimidated by it. If it's a medicine I'm not familiar with and I get the PDI form before I see the counselee, I look it up. I Google it, find out what it is, what category it's in. That tells you a lot. And then what are the side effects? Yes?
How would you distinguish if someone needed to be on medication?
If they need to be on medicine? Is that what you said? How would I distinguish? Well, if one time I had a pastor and he brought his wife to me, she was having panic attacks and she was not sleeping. Well, those are two really bad signs. And she had a huge anxiety problem. And because she wasn't sleeping, I was afraid she would end up having a psychiatric admission. And I was thinking, I hope we can avoid that. And so she was opposed to any kind of medicine. And I said, if I were you, I would call my doctor and ask the doctor to give me a mild tranquilizer just for a few days so that you can sleep. Well, they got the prescription filled, and she finally took one. And her husband later told me, she's sitting there on the sofa after she took that tranquilizer, and she said, whoa, this is really good. But she wouldn't take any more. So I guess she was afraid she would get addicted. So, but like, I had a young husband call me one time. He got my name and number, and somehow, anyway, he called me. His wife had had a psychotic break, and she had been admitted to a psychiatric hospital. And he was just panicked. I mean, they were Christians. They didn't know what to do. But I just said, she is in the place she needs to be. And I gave him hope from that, from a secular perspective as well as a biblical perspective. And he started crying. He said, you are the only one who's given me any hope. And I said, well, just because somebody has a psychotic break doesn't mean they're going to be constantly having to be on this medicine, but she needs to be on an antipsychotic now. And so after she got out, they brought her to me for counsel. And she was able to, with the doctor's help, ease off of that antipsychotic. So, yes, we need those medicines sometimes. It's a kindness from God. So.
There's people with seizure disorders.
I'm sorry?
Like people with seizure disorders.
Seizure disorders, yes.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. Yes, you... If you have seizures, you definitely need the medicine. Yes?
Have you ever had anybody on psychotropic drugs for a long period of time?
Yes. Some of my counselees have been on, like, Prozac forever. And if they want to get off, and they can talk to me about it and talk to their doctor about it. But some people are just happy as clams on the medicine because it's only the first month that you're going to usually have the really bad side effects. Your body gets used to it. Your brain gets used to it. Okay, my husband is doing this with his watch. All right, let me pray. Father, thank you so much for this group. Thank you that they found this room. And thank you that for the questions they have. And I pray that you will help them to be more informed. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay. Thank you.
You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.